Hello, everyone, and welcome to the End Credits Radio Show here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. And I am Adam A. Donaldson, and I am your host. And joining me today is
Vince Masson,
who, on this very warm day, we were talking about this, sporting the hoodie, working the hoodie.
Yeah, and I have my Get Out shirt underneath that.
He does. So no, I can confirm.
Yeah.
He's wearing Get Out, so he's very on theme.
Like I told you, it was between the three-piece suit for the John Wick episode or the Get Out shirt.
And that seemed dressy for a weekend day
maybe.
When we record.
Maybe, yeah. Suit. We'll have to wait for John Wick 4, and then we'll talk about my attire.
The three-piece suit is really more of a year-end show ensemble.
Right, yes.
Yeah.
That was my logic, too.
Excellent. End Credits is a local movie show for local movie fans. We are here every Wednesday at 2 p.m. to talk the latest in pop culture and review the newest movies, which this week will be the latest entry in the Man and His Dog action franchise, John Wick Chapter 3 Parabellum. That is in the back half of the show. For the first half, we're going to talk about some of the latest movie news from the past week, including Netflix. There are some big changes in store for the internet's biggest streaming service, but can it weather the loss of Disney and the CW? And then, about a million people have signed a petition to do over the final season of Game of Thrones because they don't like it. Why have so many fans become so unable to handle disappointment? And then finally, we'll talk about John Wick this week, but we're also going to talk about Keanu Reeves and Keanu Reeves at his best and what makes him so compelling an actor. But first, James Gunn, another compelling figure, finally broke his silence about him being cast excommunicado from,
yeah,
from
like
the
what
Disney.
You did there.
Yes.
Yeah.
From the Disney kingdom last summer. We did talk about this on the show, so people may recall that last summer, around Comic-Con time, so around the end of July, some internet alt-right people dug up old tweets of James Gunn's where he made jokes about pedophilia.
Yes. People who have very productive things to do with their time, I'm sure.
That's right.
They are really busy with
Well, the really productive thing things. Was that I think James Gunn had sent some negative things about Donald Trump, and that could not stand. Because Donald Trump must be protected.
It's like how many tweets and what did he make? It seems to change like every week. It was racist and it was homophobic and it was joking about rape. I actually saw some of the tweets that he made. I'm not going to ask what would motivate someone to make those kind of tweets. But yeah.
He did it. It's done. And
he apologized.
He apologized. Yeah. And he apologized twice when they had been dug up before, it was long before the first Guardians of the Galaxy came out. So it was like, mm-hmm. it was like a double dip, but still he's talking again about the experience. He did a big interview with Deadline.
So they fired him off of the Guardians of the Galaxy 3.
Mm-hmm.
So was he hired to do Suicide Squad, like the sequel before or after
being rehired?
3.
Yeah, it was in between.
Okay.
Yeah.
So was he ever in any threat of being removed from Suicide Squad, or did they just fire him from...
No, he signed Suicide Squad after the controversy.
Right. Okay.
So he was... This was his comeback, which is funny because a lot of people compared Suicide Squad to Guardians of the Galaxy in terms of, like, it's an off-brand, off-kilter kind of counterpunch to the normal mainstream superhero movies.
Right.
And so him... You know, and it's worth noting, too, that Disney had not announced another director. They had actually seemed to be purposefully not answering the question about who was going to do Guardians of the Galaxy 3.
Well, because it was going to be, the next person that was going to step up to direct that, like, they had some things to consider, I think. It's like, now you're in the shadow of James Gunn.
Yes.
And now everyone's going to be comparing your work to his.
Yes, that person would have been internet murdered immediately.
Right. So it's like, did Disney even have a choice? It's
right.
Like, yeah, who were they like considering for this? I love how they're pretending now, like, or they're not pretending, but it's the impression has been given, I think, that they're doing this out of the kindness of their heart. And it's like, it was either like scrap this project or rehire James Gunn,
right.
As far as I can see. And so it's like... It wasn't really an act of kindness, from what I...
No, because they had the cast on the verge of rebellion. you know, Dave Bautista was out there like right away saying,
I think that's actually why they rehired him, because they saw Dave Bautista without a shirt and they were like, we need this guy means business and we need to like we need to get James Gunn back on this.
He's a pretty intimidating guy. Yeah, if
he
you've
is.
Seen like Spectre too.
Yeah,
putting, you know, just and put even, his thumb even, in your
yeah.
eye.
Surprisingly, Blade Runner 2049 was the only one where he's like, he's intentionally made to look
yeah.
less intimidating.
He's wearing like little glasses.
Yeah. being beaten up by Ryan Gosling. It's like,
yeah, that was embarrassing. But he also has a movie coming out, Dave Bautista, where he's like a spy, but he has to protect a little girl or something. So it's like, I guess that's kind of going to be his Kindergarten Cop.
Okay. Yeah.
I can't remember what it's called. It's Kindergarten Cop 2. No, I don't know. It's not that.
Every tough guy needs a Kindergarten Cop
that's
on the resume
basically
eventually.
Basically it. Dwayne Johnson had the Tooth Fairy.
But I find it very – I find it interesting the backlash that Disney got for firing him. And it seems like what it really meant was that people don't really like people doing this. And by that I mean people kind of skulking behind people's backs and digging up old tweets
right.
and then using it against them years later. Like, it seems like the backlash was against that kind of behavior. The culture isn't quite on board with like doing this kind of stuff, which seems kind of reassuring.
Well, it's reassuring because there are a lot of bad actors out there, and one of them is this guy Jacob Wool, who — this is getting into the politics stream, which is my other show — but, you know, this guy Jacob Wool, who thinks he can weaponize Me Too to go after people he perceives as political enemies, people like Robert Mueller, people like Pete Buttigieg, who is mm-hmm. running for president. And I think the opinion is the same for these people who are trying to dig up tweets, and they were off color for sure. I mean, that's putting it generously, that the tweets were off color. You have to remember too where James Gunn comes from, which is trauma, which is not
right.
exactly Merchant Ivory down there in New Jersey,
right?
The Trauma Studios.
Fair enough.
So it's I mean, it's not even Roger Corman down at Trauma, but it's, you know, there was yeah, it was in the past. It had been brought up before. It had been dealt with, and I think a lot of people felt that Disney went to the hickory switch really, really quick,
mm-hmm.
which we've seen a lot of in the Me Too days, and I think this is why people thought it was wrong. It wasn't a Me Too situation. It wasn't like, you know, James Gunn isn't a Kevin Spacey. He's mm-hmm. not a Charlie Rose. It's something he openly and honestly addressed. He apologized, which is a rarity for someone to actually apologize for things and to be seem quite at earnest about apologizing. And then he had gendered goodwill. And, you know, in talking about the whole Marvel pantheon, I think there are actually very few of those movies where you could take out the director behind it and you would lose that voice.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think, but Guardians of the Galaxy is definitely one of them. That is James Gunn. James Gunn is Guardians, at least in terms of the movie version, because they've existed in comic books for years. But, you know, it's so pervasive that James Gunn actually rewrote the scenes with the Guardians of the Galaxy in the Avengers Infinity War script. He has an executive producer credit on those movies
mm-hmm.
because that's his ownership stake. And so a lot of people, I think, rightfully felt that you can't have these movies without James Gunn. And there was a whole back and forth while they used his script, because the script was done. It was actually supposed to go into production either at the end of last year or at the beginning of this year for being released next year. So
right.
it was good to go. And now they have to wait for him to do the Suicide Squad.
Oh, so he has to do that.
He has to do
then,
that first, yeah.
Okay. So now he's done this kind of like Oprah Winfrey-esque interview where it's like, let's mm-hmm. get everything on the table and mm-hmm. let's, you know, kind of reflect and be introspective about this whole experience. So that was the interview that you sent me. I think it's... I find him to be quite, like, genuine, to be honest with you. It mm-hmm. seems like he was kind of his life was quite disrupted by all of this. And it's like, by that I mean...
Well, he talks about how he thought his career was over, right?
Right. But on top of that, he was saying, you know, in a larger context, he was like, look, I'm like a lot of people that come to Hollywood, right, to work.
Mm.
It's like... eventually you get to a stage, and this certainly happened with James Gunn, where you get so big that you think that the admiration people have for your movies is actually admiration for you personally. And right. I think what he was saying in the interview was that this whole experience taught him that that he was using his work, his movies, as kind of a conduit for the love of, in his life, right? Mm. And when Disney took that away from him, there was only kind of real, authentic love left.
Right.
And by that, he was referring to the like the support he got from the cast and the crew.
Right.
And I can really understand that because I'm an artist as well. Like I'm also, you know, a filmmaker, and it's hard not to associate your value and your worth as a human being with this thing, this art form that you spend so much time kind of cultivating. It kind of becomes you. So I really understood what he was saying there. But there's also something slightly squeaky clean about the whole thing. He just took total 100% ownership. Like, he was very smart about how he played it, I think, taking total ownership. And the article even says that's probably one of the reasons why Disney brought him back, because he was like, all right, there's nobody coming out of the woodwork, you know. This is clearly, like, just kind of what it is.
And he didn't go on the attack either.
Right. Even though he probably could have.
He could
it's
have.
Like, why are these people digging up?
Because certainly he had people behind
tweets.
Him who would have, like, egged him on.
Right. So I think some of it was strategic, what he was doing, and a lot of it was also genuine, kind of how he was playing it.
So crisis averted. Speaking of crises, though, Netflix might be having a crisis because there's some suspicion that Netflix could lose as many as 14% of its subscribers when all the Disney paraphernalia is pulled from the channel. And it hasn't been a good week for Netflix because, I guess maybe generally for people who don't like Disney dominance of the business, because Hulu, which is a streaming service in the state, is now got a majority stake owned by Disney. So Disney basically has two streaming services now once Disney Plus launches. And then you have this other report.
Plus some of the Warner Brothers stuff that they've acquired that was kind of not related to Disney, like the Princess Bride and the stuff like that that's they've now acquired.
You mean Fox?
Fox, sorry. Yes.
Right.
Yes.
No, I mean, that's kind of the key part. Why would you acquire another whole studio? It's because you have another whole studio's worth of content you can stick on your streaming site.
Yeah. But to be clear, like, this is not, Disney Plus is not 1,000% exclusively Disney stuff. They do have some of the
Fox.
Some of the movies in the Fox repertoire.
Yeah. That's definitely part of it, too. And it seems like we're going in the direction where every studio is going to have their own streaming site. So you're going to have a Warner Brothers site. You're going to have a Universal site.
Which is, it's like, I thought this streaming stuff was supposed to be more convenient and cheaper than cable. And now it's like cable
now
all
like
over
cable.
Again.
Yeah.
It's like, which package are you going to go with? Well, I don't really like that stuff. I don't know. And Disney's got like a good price point, right? Like $7, $7.99 per month or something. That's... Mm-hmm. What, almost half of Netflix, maybe?
Mm-hmm. Well, half like the because I think Netflix has two price points now. There's the one that's still like $10 where you get like one device and you don't get the, I think it's 4K. That doesn't come with 4K. But the $14.99 one that you can watch in 4K, you can watch on multiple devices. I think it should be clear too, though, that will be the initial price point. That will go up.
Yes.
That's, you know, and that's part of this too, is like, yeah, you might lose some people who maybe won't be able to access the Avengers movies anymore. But I don't know how it works for Netflix in the States, but for Netflix here in Canada, there is an expiry date for some of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That some of the Disney stuff will disappear like a year or a year and a half after it first comes on.
On Netflix, you mean?
On Netflix,
yeah.
So it's not like it was a consistent presence anyway. You can't... those movies aren't there all the time.
I love how, like, buying physical media is just totally off the table now. Like, you could do what I do, right? Like, buy all of the Star Wars movies on Blu-ray and then keep your Netflix subscription, right? Now nobody can take those Star Wars movies away from me.
Right.
But for some reason, it's framed as, like, an either or. Which one are you going to, like, where's your allegiance going to fall? And it's like, I don't know if that's necessarily how it's going to be either, right? It's like... Yeah.
Well, if it's something I really...
Why does there have to be a clear winner in all of this?
Right. If it's something I really, really like, I will buy it. Or if it's something, like, I hate watch, or if it's, you know, something that I find interesting for a particular reason, like, just for, like, maybe research purposes or something, later on, I'll buy it. But, yeah, the thing with the streaming is interesting.
Is that your excuse for watching Mordecai? It was research purposes? No, I'm kidding.
I asked myself, what's the worst thing that Johnny Depp, Gwyneth Paltrow, and Paul Bettany could do?
Didn't have to think hard about that one.
No. They walked into a bar and made a movie called Mordecai.
But it's like, I don't know. I guess maybe I'm so on the outs in terms of what I use streaming services for, right? Like, it's all about movies for me. I've never watched an episode of The Office on Netflix. I'm not someone that sits down and watches 10,000 hours worth of these series on Netflix. It's all about, like, movies for me.
Yeah.
And even within that, it's usually about the kind of niche art house movies like Roma and, you know, stuff like that.
Right.
So that's where the appeal is for me. So it's like, it's hard for me to see somebody totally getting rid of Netflix to go with Disney Plus. It's like, does that, I don't know. It's hard for me to picture. And I think there will be a great amount of people that will get both. I think, like, it's not unusual in my circle of friends for people to have 2-3 like streaming services.
You know, I have 3 right now.
Right. Yeah. So it's like,
and it's, you know, when you kind of price it down, and I'm old enough to remember video stores, of course. So when you kind of price it down to, like, it's like $3 or $4 to rent something.
Mm-hmm.
And so Shudder costs like $8.99 a month, so that's basically... No, it doesn't even cost that much. It costs $4.99, so that's basically one... If I watch one thing on Shudder in a month, it's paid
that's
for.
That's akin to, yes.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, that's how I work it out. But you mentioned The Office. The Office, turns out, is the most popular thing on Netflix.
Right,
which they had no stake in at all, and it's something that, you know, it's been over for years. But it turns out that a lot of the most popular things on Netflix are these old shows, like The Office, like Friends, like Parks and Rec, Criminal Minds, NCIS, you know, these kind of like meat and potato shows. Not necessarily the Romas or, you know, even there's the new time travel one that just came out last week that I can't remember the name of. See You Tomorrow, I think is what it's called.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, To All the Boys I've Loved Before and things like that. I mean, and I think that will be, no matter what happens, if this, like, diversification of all studio-owned streaming sites happens, Netflix has still built a brand because of these various niche things they've done. And it's also become a destination point for big-name filmmakers like Alfonso Cuarón and like Martin Scorsese. The Irishman, of course, is coming up.
Right.
So
it's like, where are they getting... Or where is the evidence that Netflix is, like, in serious trouble? And by the way, I saw an interview, I think in the article you sent me, one of the founders of Netflix actually, like, mentions this, and he totally downplays it too. Mm. He's like, well, you know, I don't think, I forget what his exact words were, but he totally downplayed Disney and Amazon kind of creeping into their territory.
Mm. Because he I remember that he said, because there's basically so much attention for your time. And Netflix is also basically like Kleenex and Xerox now. When you're talking about Netflix, you might as well be talking about all streaming, because that's kind of the go-to when you're getting into streaming. You start with Netflix. So
right, yeah.
It's
so then
you can't doubt their influence, their impact. And everybody's trying to copy the quote-unquote Netflix model.
So, right. I don't know, and Disney Plus will, you know, obviously have a lot of, like, their own kind of equivalent of that stuff, Disney originals or whatever.
Yeah,
and But it's all like, you know, all right.
It'll be Star Wars.
It's going to be Star Wars. Yeah. Shows, now yes. We got to do the Chewbacca like backstory. Now we got to do the R2-D2 spinoff. Now we got to do this. And it's like, all right, that's just not
someone clearly doesn't remember the old droids cartoon because they already did it.
Right. Exactly.
I mean, might have been before your time. It's my time. But so anyway, we will leave that there. We're going to take a quick musical break. And we'll be right back. You're listening to End Credits here on CFRU 93.3 FM. And that was A Little Dog Star. Not one of Keanu Reeves' best projects. He was the bassist for Dog Star.
Is that a bit of foreshadowing for John Wick there?
Dog Star? where he plays bass?
Yeah. Feeling this is going to come back 20 years.
I mean, he wasn't a major part of the... again, he played bass, and I can't remember what I was listening to, but they were talking about like how Dog Star would be on Much Music, would appear on Much Music to promote their album, and Keanu Reeves would basically like sit there and not answer any questions, because that's that. Anyway, we're getting ahead of ourselves. Because first,
wouldn't he answer any questions?
Because he wasn't the front man of the band.
Okay,
but we're getting ahead of ourselves because we have to talk about the preeminent crisis of our time, which is that people don't like the ending of Game of Thrones. We said it, but. Don't worry.
Do you
they
need a
started.
Kleenex?
No, I don't. But we started a change.org petition. We got over 1 million signatures. So HBO has got to take
it seriously.
It was
half a million when I last saw it.
I know. It's gone up to 1 million by the point of our recording.
Is this just one of those free Steve Avery, we don't really know how or who will do it?
That's right.
But just free him kind of scenarios? It's like
I think
Game of Thrones. We don't know how or who will pay for this or who will do it, but just remake it.
Right. No, it's funny you should say that because one of the people who responded to this was one of the stars of Riverdale, Lily Reinhart, who said, like, if you're signing this petition, you don't know how TV works.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, just because.
But that's also the trend. It's like petitions will just solve everything. If it's if there's enough of us versus them, they'll like switch. And it's like, no, actually, it's not really how it works.
No, it's not. And I don't know if we ever talked about this on the show, but there was a petition, not a petition, but there was like a movement to get them to get Disney to remake The Last Jedi. It was like a Twitter, I think it was a Twitter handle that was like remake The Last Jedi or something. And then there was like a crowdfunding effort that raised, I think, $73,000, which is less than half of 1/2 of 1% of The Last Jedi's budget.
Right.
Like that wouldn't have paid for one day of catering on The Last Jedi. But
yeah. So there's a fundamental misunderstanding about. Stuff, but it's possible that they know how like ridiculous it is, and they're just doing it to like emphasize how much they don't like it.
I'm glad you mentioned that because there was the guy who started the petition said that he was just blowing off steam after episode 4, where I don't know if she was a key character, but a favorite character was killed at the end of episode 4, and I'm disappointed a lot of people. So this person started a petition to sort of blow off steam, and then it really picked up after episode 5, where a lot of characters died and one character, I'm trying not to spoil anything in case you're, you know, maybe listeners want to watch this later. One character kind of goes totally off the rails and is kind of responsible for much of the murdering, and it has not pleased the fandom.
Right. So, I don't watch the show. Like, let me be clear.
Yeah.
Like, I saw maybe three episodes, and it just wasn't my thing. Like, it's
hard to get into.
It's a very well done show.
Yes.
Like, it's obviously got some extraordinary production quality, like, behind it.
Mm-hmm.
Just not really my thing, right? Like, my thing was more Breaking Bad, kind of realistic, kind of contemporary, maybe stuff. And I felt like Breaking Bad was about something. It was like, I'm watching this because it's a commentary on, maybe a mild commentary on the healthcare system in the States. There's also a moral kind of issue at play here about, you know, someone who is about to die doing this.
Mm.
There were a lot of things to think about that really made it valuable for me. But Game of Thrones just struck me as like, whose head is going to get cut off this week? And it's all about like, who's on top of the families or whatever. Again, you should take my opinion with a grain of salt.
Right.
That is my assessment of the three episodes that I saw, but it wasn't something that I wanted to like kind of do. So I'm kind of out of the loop. Are people mad at the whole season, or are they mad at like how the season ended?
Well, we're recording this Sunday afternoon, so the series ends with the final episode tonight.
Okay, yeah.
It's been like development so far that, you know, certain plots, and my criticism of it is that it's very rushed, that all these details haven't been allowed to have room to breathe, that if they'd done like a traditionally they do 10 episode seasons, and I think if they'd just done that, or if they had maybe instead of splitting up the 13 episodes of season 7 and 8 like they did, instead just did a run of like 13 episodes, I think maybe some, I don't think the whole thing would be resolved, but I think that there's definitely a bit of lost momentum in the story arc where you have so many big things happening all at once, and people don't have a chance to digest it as much, and it also hasn't lacked the buildup. It's like these last six episodes have sort of felt like, at times, like the last Harry Potter movie, where it's just like
right.
kind of one big action scene.
but is that because they're trying to tell a story that George Martin is no longer like doing? Like they're trying to tell his story,
right?
Or is it because they actually like it just like wasn't good? You know what I mean? Like I'm getting the impression from the fans that it's like you went past the guy that was supposed to be telling the story.
Right.
So now you're kind of like treading on territory.
Well,
they really had to,
right? Because George R. R. Martin published book 5, and there are two more books to go. And he's been stuck for years. He hasn't published they passed book. I mean, each season of the show has been like basically one of the books.
Right.
So since season 6, the showrunners have basically been on their own. Now they've been working with the guidance of George R.R. Martin, who kind of gave them the map of where he was planning on taking the novels. And I think George R.R. Martin has said that it's not the way the show has gone is not exactly different from the general direction he's going in with the books. But I mean, for people who hate season 8, that's sort of a popular go-to. It's like, well, you're not working off the novel, so it's
right.
You don't have this really great foundation from which you can build this show that, you know, you're able to, I guess, adapt really, really well, but you can't necessarily.
But and also, are these petitions like a sign of some kind of change in the audience, the psychology of
yeah.
the audience? Is it possible that they now feel more entitled to things?
Right.
I guess because, you know, everything's marketed towards the audience, right? Streaming
yes.
services, we're doing this all for you. It's
right.
what you want. It's the story you want to pay attention to, right? So there's a certain maybe entitlement from the audience that I want the story that I want
right.
instead of what it's always been, which is this is the interpretation of the filmmakers or creators, and we have to, regardless, for better or worse, we have to just put up with that, actually.
I think that's exactly it. And I think that the one kind of example sticks out of my mind is the Veronica Mars movie, which was made due to GoFundMe efforts, and Rob Thomas, who was the creator and writer and director of Veronica Mars, basically said that the movie would have been very different if he had have like been using studio money instead of like using fan money. So he wrote that script with an eye towards pleasing fans, not necessarily doing what was like dramatically the best move for the characters.
Yeah, that's the other interesting thing. It's like when you try to like appeal to the audience,
right,
it has the reverse effect.
That's
it's
right,
like,
too.
I could feel them doing it, right? I don't really watch these superhero movies, but I could feel them doing it on Batman versus Superman. It's
right.
Like we have to cram all of these characters in here to appeal to the audience.
Right.
And the audience can tell. Like, people are not dumb. They can tell when you're pandering to them, I think.
I think so. Yeah.
And so it's like, it's almost twofold. It's like, even
yes,
if you
yes.
got even if you got the season that you like wanted, whatever that means, you would just be whining about how
yeah.
it doesn't fit your expectations even
right.
more. So it's like,
yeah.
just let them do what they want to do. You know,
or wait
I mean?
For the ending. Because again, the show hasn't ended as we're recording this. We got a few minutes to cram in some Keanu love before we get into John Wick. Number three.
All right.
I think people, when I think of Keanu Reeves, think mostly of like the triumvirate, which I would call Bill and Ted, Speed, and The Matrix.
Yep.
But he has a really big body and a diverse body of work, like Dogstar. He played bass in a band. But I want to highlight Side by Side, which is a documentary
yes.
he didn't direct it, but he was like basically hosting it, where he was talking about the shift from film to digital, and he's, you know, there you have Keanu Reeves doing his Mike Wallace impression, interviewing James Cameron and Christopher Nolan, and it's an interesting movie.
And taking on a conversation that is arguably for, you know, like hardcore
yeah.
people, like it kind of affects like hardcore kind of filmmakers, right? It's
mm-hmm.
like an actor wouldn't necessarily need to be
yes.
Involved in this the way that Keanu Reeves was. So, yeah, I admire it.
Yeah.
Big time.
Do you have a favorite Keanu?
I don't. I you know, I have a fondness for the Francis Coppola Dracula,
yes.
which is arguably one of the worst accents in the history of cinema on Keanu Reeves' parts.
He sticks out like a sore thumb.
But it's such a like great, creepy kind of movie. And Francis Coppola obviously having like some serious troubles in his career at that point, right?
Mm-hmm.
Trying to like pay off massive debts. But so there's that. And then I also just have a fondness for The Matrix. I think that was where I had never seen any Bill and Ted movies prior to that. And
mm.
I remember I've mentioned this before, but my parents took me to The Matrix in 1999 instead of The Phantom Menace, which is
right.
what everyone in school was going to see. And I came back on Monday and they're like, did you see Phantom Menace? And I was like, no, I saw this dumb movie called The Matrix. And as it turns out, was like extraordinary, obviously.
Yeah.
But
I feel like that. I think that story explains a lot. I admire Keanu Reeves because he will try stuff like Dracula, and he'll do like Much Ado About Nothing or Dangerous Liaisons, which was one of his first movies.
And we're also forgetting he is just, well, maybe not forgetting, but it's been reiterated that he is just like a good, kind soul. You know
yeah.
what I mean? He is just a good human being, right? Like
yeah.
even a couple weeks ago, right? He's promoting John Wick 3 on I forget what late night talk show host that is, but he's like, "What do you think happens when you die, Keanu Reeves?" After this very kind of lighthearted,
that was Colbert, yeah.
Oh, Colbert, right? And he's like, "I know the people that love us will miss us," and it was this very. It even made Colbert like He just like gave him a pat on the hand.
Yeah.
He didn't know what to say.
Yeah.
But it's like, yeah, it's just he's a really beautiful human being.
Yeah, he's a character. I think the world needs more Keanu Reeves.
Absolutely,
people,
yeah.
People in the Keanu Reeves mold.
And on The Matrix, let's not forget he gave up an enormous part of his salary to the special effects people.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah, so he's just, you know, out there doing the Keanu Reeves thing and I think before we get into John Wick 2, I think that he trains hard.
Yeah.
He is 15 years older than me, and I don't know how he does it because I can get out of bed some mornings with, like, I can't count the number of cricks on the number on fingers on my hand, but he's out there like flipping around and riding motorcycles and fighting ninjas and doing gun fu, and you know, he's a presence to be sure. There will never be another Keanu Reeves.
Yeah, well, I think he knows the effect on screen of having somebody who knows what they're doing.
Yeah, you know? Definitely. He's one of the hardest working guys in Hollywood, that's for sure. We're going to talk more about Keanu Reeves and John Wick in a second, just after we do a little bit of music here. You are listening to End Credits here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca. Well, keep us in community radio.
You do realize that I'm management now, right? I'm not service anymore, John, so I don't go around shooting people in the head.
I'm not asking you to kill anyone. I just need you to get me to him.
To who?
Your old boss.
You want to kill Baratta?
I'm not going to kill him. I just need to talk.
What could he possibly give to you?
Guidance.
I made a deal when I agreed to run this hotel, and that deal said that I had to follow the rules of the table. If you're not gonna kill him, he is gonna kill you, and then probably me too for walking you up in there.
And that was a clip from John Wick, Chapter 3, subtitle Parabellum, the new film from Chad Stahelski. And it stars Keanu Reeves, Halle Berry, Lawrence Fishburne, Mark Dacascos, Lance Reddick, Asia Kate Dillon, Angelica Houston, and Ian McShane.
Does it also have the Iron Chef America host in it?
Isn't that Mark Dacascos?
Oh, okay. Yes. Sorry, I missed that.
Yeah.
Sorry, I was so enamored by him that I missed when you gave away the cast. I was shocked to see him. I was like shocked.
It's one of a number of sort of surprising sort of appearances when you have Angelica Houston in this as like basically the head of, it seems kind of quasi-Romani, this crime family that specializes in ballet and assassination that apparently is where John Wick like learned his trade.
They just threw like darts at a dartboard full of words. They were like, ballet, tattoos, yes.
But yes. I think that's one of the things that I admire about these movies is the world building. You know, it seems random, but it, like these things do sort of like build on one another. That you have this really kind of visceral world, and it's not based on anything. It's not based on like a book or a movie or a comic or something. This is like purely from the heads of the screenwriters and the directors that, you know, they have this intricate crime world where you have the king of the Bowery, where you have the high table, and you have the elders above the high table, and you have the Continentals, and then in the midst of this is John Wick, who made it this far because they killed his dog.
Yeah. Imagine that, a guy whose dog is killed and he goes out for revenge. No adaptation, just straight from the heads of the screenwriters. How did they do such an amazingly original concept?
It's so weird that we have this expansive franchise. Because I was thinking about this today. I don't remember seeing a trailer for the first John Wick. I don't remember seeing like TV commercials for the first John Wick. I discovered it like after the fact. Like I think I discovered it on Netflix actually. It came on the Netflix after its theatrical release and I was like, "Oh, John Wick, I guess maybe I'll check it out." And it was so enthralling. And I've revisited it several times because it's just so fun. It's just so kinetic. It's a visual feast. I love the New York locations. The actors in it, you know, talking about Game of Thrones, Alfie Allen is sort of the guy who kills John Wick's dog in that. And when John Wick first came out, it was like right in the middle of sort of Game of Thrones, when Alfie Allen's character was like one of the most hated characters and everyone wanted to see him get his comeuppance. So to see Keanu Reeves like chase him through the streets of New York with a gun was kind of satisfying.
Yeah. Here's the thing. I'm with you on the first one, right? The
right.
first one, I don't think they even knew how big of a success it was going to be, right? It was almost just this vehicle for the plot was very thin. It was almost this vehicle for just watching Keanu Reeves take people out. I mean, it was entertaining for sure. Now we're like two movies later, and I'm not quite so entertained by this series anymore. Mm. And I'm trying to like figure out why. And it's not that I wasn't entertained, right? There's a lot of stuff going on. It's just that what they're giving me is not enough, right?
Right.
I'm so sick of like these cardboard characters. I'm sick of the no plot. It's suffering from Fast and the Furious syndrome now, which is that Fast and the Furious used to be about cars. And then it got so off the rails that it's not about cars anymore.
Right.
The same thing is happening with John Wick. It used to be about a guy who's going after people who killed his dog. And now it's just about the ridiculousness of what you're talking about. These different factions and different like cells and these different and they all speak like the most generic I don't even know what, like 1950s, like James Bond, Mr. Wick, it is so nice to see you. And everyone has this ridiculous Russian accent and nobody has like any character like whatsoever. There's like a little bit of depth in John Wick. They tried to give him a little bit of depth in the idea that with the idea that he was married and then I guess something happened to his wife or whatever. I don't remember any of this stuff. But
she just got sick and died.
So it's like they had an opportunity to kind of give
easiest
him
money
more.
Bridget Moynihan's ever made.
Sure. More people I don't know. But now it's like, but they never like take advantage of it, right? It's like, it's never like, I don't know, maybe he's considering getting out of the business. Like John Wick himself is never changing. It is always the same. Like 20-minute long hallway sequences where he's just like shooting people, and it's. Let me just say this: I find it funny who we choose to lay the blame on in this society as it pertains to violence in the media. Right.
Right.
Tarantino's got a movie coming out in a couple of months. I have no doubt that he's going to have to do his same song and dance defending himself against violence in his movies or whatever. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But people forget that he's working with incredible technicians. He's got Bob Richardson, one of the greatest DOPs, working for him. He's got Oscar-winning, Oscar-nominated screenplays, right? His movies have actual integrity. So it's like, why is he the scapegoat that we go after every time?
Right.
When movies like this, I think, are contributing way more to desensitizing people to violence than his movies are. And I'm not sitting here like trying to preach about the evils of these kinds of movies. I am just saying that I think these movies are not getting any of, are doing much, much more harm, and we're not picking them out. By the end of this movie, you are so desensitized to people being stabbed and beaten and brutalized and cracked and dummied. It's just like your brain is numb, or at least mine was. I was like, dude, I need to take a walk through a garden or something, man. It's like, I can't, if I hear one more phony Russian accent coupled with this, it's like, yeah, now they've got Halle Berry in, right? And Halle Berry obviously serves no purpose. It's like, what does her character do except...
She has two dogs.
She has two dogs, yeah. And the dog has like a little bulletproof vest, so it's like... It's like we're up in the game with the dogs.
Right.
Look at that. Yeah.
I don't necessarily disagree with any of that. And I think you're right about desensitization of violence, because there were scenes like I was laughing at the violence.
Right.
Because it's so over the top.
And this is coming from a guy that didn't like Upgrade, right? And I thought Upgrade was actually kind of socially, had little like kind of social
I don't disagree with the message of Upgrade. I don't think they sold it particularly well.
Fine.
But leaving that aside, the first scene in the first fight scene in the movie in the library where he fights the big tall guy, and it's just like this brutal handheld fight. When it was done, there were a couple of people in the theater who clapped.
Yeah.
Which I found hilarious that there were people applauding the first fight in the John Wick movie. I think when you're talking, one of the things I come back to is when you're talking about violence in media.
And I didn't mean to steer it did occur to me.
It's fine. No, it's fine. But I think that when you're talking about violence in media, here's two shows about serial killers. One is Hannibal, mm-hmm. which every kill there's one episode of Hannibal where a person is killed and they're cut up into thin sections and put on slides. And you see this whole person sort of laid out in very various slides. And it's a really visceral, really graphic way that someone has been killed. You compare that to something like Criminal Minds, which isn't necessarily as graphic, but it's meant to be as realistic as possible. Like the stuff that happens on Criminal Minds could be something that a real serial killer or a real serial offender could do. But Hannibal is over the top. It's meant to be like purposefully over the top and campy and overly dramatic versus something that's more visceral and more real. And I think that's sort of the difference is I think, yeah, there is violence that you are meant to. And I mean, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood will be hit especially because it's based on an actual violent incident.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're talking about the violence in John Wick, it is purposefully over the top. It is purposefully operatic. And, you know, there's
is more... it over the top, though? Not when he's, like, stabbing a guy in the eye with a piece of glass, man. It's like...
Well, the way it is staged, too, the way it is staged is, and this probably comes from Chad Stahelski's background as a stunt coordinator,
right?
Is that it's almost like a musical number. Where it's very choreographed. There's none of the shaky cam nonsense like you get in the Bourne movies.
Mm-hmm.
It's very staged. It's very purposefully elaborate. And yeah, there's bones crunching and blood spurting and flesh being penetrated by metal things. But I think, speaking of plot or lack thereof, it is meant to be a showcase of, look at all this weirdo stuff we can do. With, like, the action. Like, in this movie, there's a sword fight. There's
right.
a fight with John Wick on horseback. There's a fight with John Wick on motorcycles. there's a fight in a glass room with multiple levels.
So there's my other problem. They think the more crazy the stunts, the better the movie. And it's like, no, I'm sorry. Although Mad Max Fury Road keeps, like, standing out as the exception to all of this, right?
Yeah.
It was kind of like the fourth movie, or it was the third one, I forget.
Fourth,
And the artistry of that movie was really just in, like, how good they staged all of that chaos, right?
Well, it's also, like, in, like, the John Wick movies, it's all about the practical stuff. The CGI is minimal. In Mad Max, they really went out into the middle of the desert and drove these elaborate cars that were built around.
But it also isn't. It's like... You get that little splatter of, like, CG blood every time somebody gets shot, and it's the same thing. And listen, I commend them for the staging of the action like you're talking about. I'm just saying it gets boring after, like, the fourth or fifth thing. It's
right.
like a video game, you know what I mean?
Mm.
It's like, I don't know. I don't know if I could be totally blamed for wanting more of a script, right?
No,
so it's like,
no,
here
it's
they
fine.
Go. They go to wherever. They go to Casablanca or whatever. It's like, why are we in Casablanca? Just because it's far and exotic.
Yeah.
And it has nothing to do with the story. It's just somewhere he can go. And it's
right.
like, how hard would it have been for your scriptwriters to tie this into the story somehow? It's like, right? And then he goes there. And of course, the guy is dressed like he just got off the set of the new Aladdin, like in Agrabah with all of this.
He
you
might
know.
Have. There aren't that many Middle Eastern actors in Hollywood.
And you know who it was? It was the guy that tortured Mark Wahlberg in Three Kings, actually.
Yes.
I recognized
Saeed,
him.
Saeed.
I was like, I'm so glad to see you again.
He pops up in a lot of things.
But it's like, okay, he goes and then he gets his little advice.
I think he's a real Moroccan actor. Like he's, anyway, go on.
Really?
So they cast that appropriately. What do you think of John Wick now?
No,
I got a Moroccan to play a Moroccan.
I'm just saying, like, okay, then he flees Morocco after he gets his advice, and then Morocco is never mentioned in any way, shape, or form, and the whole narrative of the movie is just John Wick bouncing from one place, getting help from one friend. All of these friends that he has are like Deus Ex Machinas. They just show up and do what he needs them to do. And until he can, like, get to the next set piece.
Right. That was baked into the cake from the beginning. Because Willem Dafoe was like that in the first movie.
Fine. I don't remember the first one. I'm pretty sure I didn't even see the second one, so...
I don't know if you miss much with the second one. Like, because...
This whole thing with these, like... this group that's like hunting down John Wick, and it's like led by this sinister woman who's like totally like one dimensional and like,
I was gonna
you
say,
you broke the rules and now you must pay. And it's like,
I want to say that
Aisha
Kate Dillon identifies as non-binary, so they.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Although I think she was leaning a bit more into the femme side with this role than she was, because she's also on Billions, where she's very obviously non-gender binary.
My complaint is with the...
With the one-dimensionalness
of the
character.
With the purpose of the character. It's like...
But I found her very magnetic. It's like, you're not wrong. You're absolutely not wrong about the dimensions. But I do enjoy, like, seeing, you know, this eclectic cast they've brought together. Yeah. And to get back to Mark Dacascos, I love how his character, who's like the leader of this ninja clan, they have actual ninjas in the movie, which I enjoyed. But I love how he's also a John Wick fanboy. There's a scene where they're like, he's also like, I just want to say, I love your work. I found that kind of hilarious. That, you know.
Yeah, I'll give them that. They gave him a little bit more of a dimension.
Yeah.
fair enough.
But I think John Wick is one of those things where you kind of either go with them or you don't.
Absolutely.
And I went with it. I enjoyed it immensely. I loved watching the action. I mean, one of the things I will say in criticism is that in the first movie, John Wick gets hurt, and you actually see him having to like struggle with that over the course of the film with like every injury. There's like a full out scene where he actually has to get treatment from the doctor, and like the doctor, you know, notes that, you know, you can keep fighting, but you're going to hurt yourself more. And you see that over the course of the film. In this movie, it's kind of doing the things that action movies do, where as with every sequel, the hero becomes more and more Superman-like, shall we say.
Right. Although he does do a certain disfigurement in this movie that I found very bizarre.
Yeah. right. But
he
does
disfigure himself in a way that made me kind of confused. I was like, okay, I think I missed something there.
Yeah, it's...
The narrative's tight. Not only does he get hurt less, but when he does get hurt, he shrugs it off so easily too. It's like,
I
thought we were done with this in 1999, man. It's like,
right, and
when
that's,
the guy doesn't react.
That's been the bane of like, not just any action movies, but like a lot, like anything that's like long running. That the further along you go, sort of the less the rules matter, and it's more about
the
spectacle. So
the more
I mean,
the script matters for me.
Right.
So here's what I'm going to say. I'm going to say save your money for John Wick and go see Longshot with Seth Rogen. That's my recommendation.
I would recommend, if you feel like John Wick, see John Wick, but I would also recommend seeing Longshot.
I'm talking to the people that are like me, right? I'm not talking about the people that just double build John Wick and Endgame, right? It's like, if you're talking to a guy that watched Barry Lyndon 2 weeks ago, okay? It's
not
John Wick. I am not the person that is going to be the advocate for John Wick. I'm sorry.
Well, I guess we'll have to leave that there. with John Wick advocatelessness. Anyway, we'll wrap that up there. And we hope you like this week's show, as we hope you liked every week's show. And if you want to listen to it again, you can find us on our website, endcreditsradioshow.com. You can also download it from the Guelph Politicast channel every Friday on Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. You can find us on social media at Facebook at End Credits Radio Show, or on Twitter at End Credits Radio. And Vince, where can people find more of you?
On Twitter at VMassin5.
Alrighty.
I finally got a retweet from, I don't want to say a celebrity, but maybe a more known figure.
Really?
Yeah. Do you remember Kevin Pereira from Attack of the Show? This is a celebrity in my world, not to the general public, by the way.
I do remember Attack of the Show.
All right.
Anyway. Well. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Adam A. Donaldson, and you can find my political stuff at GuelphPolitico.ca. You can stay tuned for more great programming here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus Community Radio, and we'll be back next Wednesday at 2 p.m. for more end credits, and we will see you then.